Hello, yes, all of us at the team.
Yes.
You're speaking on behalf. On behalf of myself and the driver and all of the team on board.
It's a lovely, lovely team we've got actually this morning as well. And it's great to have you with us. Welcome here till 10 o'clock with the breakfast programme.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And here are the headlines. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described the killing of Hezbollah's leader Hassan Nasrallah as a historic turning point. Iran, which backs Hezbollah, has promised to avenge his death, stoking fears of escalation in the region. Dinah Struhl is from the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
Hezbollah has been Iran's insurance policy, and Hezbollah's arsenal of missiles, attack drones, and rockets is always what Iran planned to unleash on Israel when the regime in Tehran feels or has felt threatened. But now Israel has been so successful in decapitating the entire senior leadership of this organization and eliminating so many of its weapons that Iran has really lost that insurance policy.
The MP Rosie Duffield has accused Sir Keir Starmer's government of taking Labour voters for granted. She's resigned from the party and will now sit as an independent MP. She's criticised the Prime Minister for accepting tens of thousands of pounds worth of gifts from donors. Downing Street is yet to respond. Here's our political correspondent, Damian Grammaticus.
Rosie Duffield told the BBC she believed Sir Keir Starmer cared more about greed and power than making a difference. Her resignation letter was deeply critical of the Prime Minister for his leadership, calling it uninspiring. His policy of cutting winter fuel support, saying it's cruel and unnecessary, and his accepting of gifts, calling it avarice off the scale. Speaking to Sunday with Laura Kunzberg, she said it was profoundly disappointing. There's no sign other Labour MPs plan to follow her. Reactions from them have ranged from regret she's gone to criticism that she had not already been suspended by the party.
The Conservative Party conference starts in Birmingham today. The four contenders for the leadership will make their pitches before Tory MPs decide which two will make it through to the final ballot.
Three people have been charged with murdering a man who was stabbed in Norwich last week. The body of Calvin Taylor, who was 19, was found in a flat last Saturday.
SpaceX has launched its mission to bring back two astronauts stranded on the International Space Station since June. The Dragon capsule, which has two empty seats for Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams, lifted off from Cape Canaveral in Florida.
And here we go again. Oasis are due to reveal more details on Monday after a cryptic message appeared on social media. The band posted photos of billboards featuring Noel and Liam Gallagher with the headline, "Be careful what you wish for." What's that all about?
Well, I think what this is about is you being already massively wearied by the Oasis publicity.
I must be the only person in the country who feels that way. I have that feeling. What do you think that 85058, what can this mean? Be careful what you wish for. And you can say whatever you like, really, as long as it's broadcastable. James Gregg has got the sport.
Good
and,
morning.
Heck of a day in the Premier League yesterday, wasn't it? For all sorts of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much to talk about, actually, this morning. I mean, you know, look, it's a good job there is, because it keeps people like me in a job, really, doesn't it? But once again, it was the Cole Palmer show at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea beating Brighton 4-2. He became, though, the first player to score four goals in the first half of a Premier League match. It's Liverpool who lead the way, though, in terms of the Premier League table. I know it's still the early stages and they're only six games in. They have, though, won five of their opening six matches. They obviously took advantage of Manchester City dropping points to go top after that 2-1 victory over Wolves at Molineux yesterday. Arsenal level on points with City, by the way, one back of Arne Slot's side, courtesy of a late win over Leicester. Plenty more to unpack from that. We'll do that throughout the morning. Rangers will look to narrow the gap on the Scottish Premiership leader Celtic, by the way. They take on Hibs at lunchtime. Celtic just keep on winning. They beat St Johnstone 6-0 away from home yesterday. They've won all of their opening six matches in the league so far this campaign. Saracens beat Sale 45-26 to claim their second win of the season. They move top of the Premiership. Also wins for Harlequins and Northampton. Cardiff came from behind to beat Scarlets 24-15 in the URC. And with England due to take on Australia in their fifth and deciding one day international later, cricket's domestic summer is coming to a close. Just the promotion and relegation still still to play for. It's Lancashire, who yesterday were officially relegated from Division 1, but coming in the other direction are their traditional rivals, Yorkshire. I won't say too much more about that this morning. There is so much else to go at. We'll try and do that throughout the morning here on Sunday Breakfast.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live, the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast.
With Eleanor Oldroyd and Chris Warburton.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good morning. Welcome to the programme. 4 minutes past seven, Sunday morning. And yes, a lot of sport to talk about this morning. The Premier League. I was listening to Five Live Sport yesterday afternoon, of course, always on a Saturday afternoon. Excellent coverage. And got that sense, it was Deno and Pat Nevin saying, yeah, this, if Arsenal score again, this game's all over. Mm-hmm. Nothing to worry about. Then all of a sudden, kind of wandered off and did something else. Yeah. Came back and it was 2-2. And I was thinking, what? So that was thrilling. Cole Palmer as well. Like, we'll talk more about that.
Cole Palmer. I mean, it's always a bit unfair, isn't it? Theo Walcott was on Match of the Day last night and was saying, he's got a bit of finesse, Bergkamp, Van Persie about him, and they weren't bad at all. And then you go and look at the comments section. That was on the BBC Sport website. It's been written up. And just basically everybody saying, just let him get on with it. Yes. Don't compare him to Dennis Bergkamp.
Absolutely. He can just be Cole Palmer.
Yeah, exactly.
For a bit longer.
For now, yeah.
But Liverpool back on top as well. We should mention that. So
yeah, true.
Second week
yeah.
in a row that City have dropped points. So that's a really interesting potentially. And also Man United Tottenham today is the big game. Ipswich Aston Villa as well. And we'll look ahead to the cricket, keeping everything crossed that the cricket will happen. Later on this afternoon, Bristol, final game of the season, international game of the season. But we're going to be talking about heavy rain in the southwest later on.
We'll
and I suspect the two things will be linked.
Yes, good point. Good point. Be careful what you wish for. Oasis putting it on a billboard and appearing on social media. Mm-hmm. The constant hype. I don't believe there's a chance of them completing the tour. I think that the chances are very slim, says Keith. Mark in Northumberland, be careful what you wish for. Surely the new album title. Oof, yeah, that's a fair point. Could well be.
Yeah, not a bad name. Yes.
That was
a bit simple though, wouldn't it, really?
Probably, yeah. There was some filming going on in the area where I live, and they're originally from about a mile down the road as the crow flies from where I live, and I know exactly where their house was. Where they were. And now we're talking about them again. By the way, sorry. There was some filming going on, and everyone was like, "Oh, it was Oasis! They're filming the new video. They're filming the new video in the kebab shop. It's all going on there." And everyone took photos. They went mad. People. Oh, yeah. And then rumours that they were in a bar down the way. You know, a local Irish bar we've got, and everyone said, "Yeah, they were there. They were there last night." And it was just filming for a famous sports retailer and nothing to do with them.
So the whole, it was at Burnage, isn't it?
But we're just down the way from there. So, they did used to drink where I live. So there was an element of believability. But anyway.
We've now jumped on to the hype train, haven't we?
Well, we're not going to stick on it, though.
Get off the first stop,
yeah.
Yes.
Don't worry about that. So lots to talk about. And we'll talk about the Conservative Party conference as well. That's something we'll get into. And whether at the end of it we'll have a clearer idea of who the next Conservative leader might be. But our top story this morning, fears of a wider war in the Middle East are growing as Iran says the death of the leader of Hezbollah will not go unavenged. The country has declared 5 days of mourning for Hassan Nasrallah after he was killed by an Israeli airstrike on the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
US President Joe Biden says his death is a measure of justice for his many victims, but called again for a ceasefire.
Let's hear from our international editor, Jeremy Bowen. He says the decisions taken over the next few days could determine whether the conflict spirals into a wider war.
It still has experienced fighters. It still has weapons. How the people who are there now after him decide to use those, what their allies in Iran decide to do, and the way Israel decides to try to follow up the success it's had so far, all that shorter term could lead to a wider Middle East war. Longer term, it could even reshape the region.
Well, let's speak to the former BBC Middle East correspondent Jim Muir, who is in Beirut. Morning, Jim.
Good morning, Chris.
We'll get on to that question of whether it might well spark a wider war and what that might look like in a moment. Just give me an idea, though, Jim. What has it been like overnight? What has it been like, given you're in the city itself? What has it been like over the past week?
Well, in my particular part of the city, which is West Beirut, it's been, we haven't had direct impacts here. We haven't had explosions or bombs actually in our area. We, of course, all heard on Friday the massive series, very tight series, just a few seconds, with a huge number of explosions, very big ones, that signified that Hassan Nasrallah was being killed in the suburbs, not very far away, but as I say, massive blasts that shook the whole city and were heard all around the whole its outskirts of Beirut as well. What we have had is a wave of displaced people because Israel has been hitting the southern suburbs, very densely populated. A lot of people have fled from there and, of course, from the south of the country and the east as well. So they've converged on relatively safe places like here. So our whole area is swamped with people looking for somewhere to stay, some of them sleeping out. But that's been the main impact here and very visible.
Yes, yeah, no, I've seen pictures of people sleeping in the street as a result of what's going on. How important was Nasrallah to the direction and strength of Hezbollah? And what impact, Jim, does his death have on their ability to fight?
That's several big questions wrapped in there. He was absolutely central. He led the organization for 30 years, 30 turbulent years, in which he was credited with what they regarded as some defeats of Israel, and of course by a lot of the international community with leading a kind of terror outfit. So mixed feelings about that. But he was extremely important. He was a almost revered figurehead for the movement. So the question you ask, quite rightly, is what does his removal mean in terms of their ability to function? Mm. Well, so far, the organization has shown, although the fact that so many of their leaders have been wiped out in the last couple of weeks, has shown a remarkable ability to kind of keep going. They're still firing rockets into Israel now, albeit at a somewhat reduced rate. But they do seem to have a flexible leadership system that allows understudies, as it were, to step in the moment somebody's killed, and they almost expect to be killed. There's a cult of martyrdom. Nasrallah himself, his predecessor, was killed. His eldest son was killed. So there's when they get killed themselves, people congratulate them. They don't commiserate because for them the cult of martyrdom is so strong. But there's now a bit of a vacuum. Now there's his cousin Hashim Safieddine who's been kind of groomed for leadership, and it's widely expected he will take over. At the moment, his main qualification is that he's still alive, and so many others have been rubbed out. But as I say, it continues to function, but it's limping. It's limping. It's badly hurt, and the Israelis are continuing to press home their advantage every day with more strikes throughout the country, and they're talking about a kind of expanding their operations, meaning perhaps some kind of limited ground attack in the south to really clear out the border zone. But we don't yet know what exactly they mean by that.
Obviously, people are watching exactly what Iran say and do following this, and they say that this attack will not go unavenged. As we said in the introduction, they are the financial and military backers of Hezbollah, obviously. Now, in terms of when people talk about this could spiral into a wider regional conflict, we heard Jeremy Bowen saying just that, Jim. My question is, what does that look like? You know, I mean, we already have, you know, activity going on more than one front. So what does that look like? I mean, does it mean the actual much more military involvement of Iran, or what? Where could that go?
Well, it could get badly out of hand, and we're talking kind of theoretically because I don't personally think it's very likely. It's quite clear Iran wants to avoid a direct confrontation with Israel. I think when it talks about vengeance and so on, it's thinking more in terms of perhaps clandestinely winding up its allies or proxies, if you want to call them that, in places like Iraq and also Yemen, the Houthis. They fired off a ballistic missile in the direction of Tel Aviv airport yesterday, which was intercepted. So I think they're really hinting at a kind of escalation of problems from those quarters, from Iranian-backed militias in Iraq who have the possibility of attacking American bases there, and in Syria, and the Houthis. Iran doesn't want to get involved. If it did, it would be falling into Israel's trap, because, you know, Israel's been sort of trying to goad them into a confrontation from the beginning. And, you know, they would certainly come off worse. But if there were to be a wholesale flare-up, you could see Iran, for example, attacking American bases, which are all along the Arab side of the Gulf, in places like Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, etc., and, of course, in Iraq and Syria as well. So it could get very ugly. The Americans could get drawn in. They don't want to be, but with Mr. Netanyahu apparently pretty much beyond American control, almost anything could happen. But my bet is that any response will be pretty muted, because, you know, there's a limited amount of things they can do without launching a war which they don't want.
Okay, Jim, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Always good to get your views and knowledge on this one. Thank you very much. Former BBC Middle East correspondent Jim Muir in Beirut. We will speak to more guests about this later on in the programme. Such an important moment, really, yesterday, in terms of where this might all head next. We're going to speak to a former UK ambassador to the United Nations, and also we'll speak to an aid worker who's currently operating in Lebanon. It's 7:15 now.
This weekend on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Today on 5 Live Premier League Sunday, there's live commentary of Ipswich versus Aston Villa at 2.
And the ball does find its way to the back of the net.
And Manchester United versus Tottenham at 4:30.
Fired back in.
Five Live Sports.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
We'll talk a bit later on about the Conservative Party conference, which starts today in Birmingham. But first, a story involving Labour. The Kent MP Rosie Duffield has resigned from the Labour Party because of what she called Sir Keir Starmer's cruel policies. She told the BBC's Laura Koonsberg she was profoundly disappointed by Sir Keir.
We all had our faith in Keir Starmer and a Labour government, and I feel that voters and activists and MPs are being completely laughed at and completely taken for granted.
Well, Downing Street hasn't yet commented, but Cabinet Minister Pat McFadden is due to speak to Laura Koonsberg this morning on BBC One as well, so he'll probably get asked about it. Well, I guarantee he will get asked about it. But let's talk a bit more to our Chief Political Correspondent, Henry Zeffman. Good morning.
Morning.
So tell us a bit about Rosie Duffield and why everyone is getting quite worked up about what she said.
Well, I think people are getting worked up because it's an extraordinary thing to quit a political party as a member of parliament at any time, but to do so less than 3 months after a general election, after winning under the party's banner in a national election. I can't really think of any precedent for that. People do, although it's quite rare, leave parties either to be an independent, as Rosie Duffield now will, or to join another party. That's called defecting. But I can't think of an example of someone doing this so soon after a general election. On the other hand, Rosie Duffield has very publicly been uncomfortable with the Labour Party on various issues for some time now. Now, her letter actually doesn't focus on the main tension she's had with the Labour Party for years, which is over women's rights and some of the transgender debate. Actually, in the last couple of years, I think the Labour Party's position has moved much closer to where she is. But clearly in her letter, she talks about winter fuel. She talks about the recent rows over freebies and donations to Keir Starmer. So there's a broad sweep of things that she says have brought her to this point.
Could more MPs follow her? I mean, what's the general reaction been? What's the feeling like in the Labour Party about this?
Well, I think people I've spoken to since this broke last night are sort of that combination of not at all surprised, because there'd been a lot of speculation actually in the run-up to the last general election that she might defect to the Conservatives. She hasn't done that. She's decided to become an independent. But on the other hand, I think a lot of people are startled that she's done it now. We haven't had a lot of public reaction. We have had one Labour MP called Nadia Whittam, represents a constituency in Nottingham, saying that Rosie Duffield should never have been allowed the privilege of resigning. Labour should have withdrawn the whip long ago. And that's her taking issue with Rosie Duffield's stance on women's rights and transgender issues. So I think that gives you a sense of the scale of divisions within the Labour Party on that issue. But as I say, it's quite striking that the resignation letter doesn't talk about that. It talks about winter fuel and freebies. I don't think anyone is going to follow her anytime soon, certainly over those issues. But look, we're at the start of a long 5-year parliament. Who's to say what might happen further down the track?
Yeah, I mean, and do you think it is an indication that there is clearly in some areas of the Labour Party, and, you know, Rosie Duffield might be a little bit of an outlier in some people's views, but there are going to be people who do share her views that actually, you know, to cut winter fuel payments or to remove the element of the winter fuel payments that's a universal credit, and also this business of freebies is actually really quite potentially damaging further down the line.
Unquestionably. And I think the fact that Rosie Duffield focused her resignation letter on those issues gives you a sense of how many Labour MPs, you know, it's not just MPs from the left of the Labour Party who might be Keir Starmer's natural opponents. Rosie Duffield isn't really on, or wasn't really on the left of the Labour Party. She was a bit more sort of centrist than that. So it shows you how broad that feeling is. I think actually, though, the political risk here for Keir Starmer isn't on the substance of what Rosie Duffield raises. It's the fact that his general election victory, as I say, I mean, it feels incredible to me that it's still less than 3 months ago because it feels like it's been longer covering it, but maybe that's just me. But the political risk for Keir Starmer is that he didn't just win on a anti-conservative platform. I think part of his appeal, part of what he told the public, was that they would have to think about politics less. If Labour won a big majority, his phrase was politics would tread more lightly on people's lives. Essentially, he was saying he would bring an end to the political chaos of recent years, probably right back to Brexit, 8 years or so. And I think another resignation from a political party this soon after a general election gives you a sense that if he is going to stop the chaos, he's not managed to do so yet, has he?
Yeah. And you'll be heading shortly, I imagine, up to Birmingham for the Conservative Party conference. And, you know, we'll talk a bit more about that. And there's a lot of internal stuff going on. Obviously, they've got to elect a new leader. But is this the kind of thing that will give just a little bit of, you know, a little bit of schadenfreude, if you like, among the Conservatives who'll be gathering in Birmingham today?
I think a lot of schadenfreude, not just a little bit. I mean, it's a strange Conservative Party conference. Rishi Sunak is there. He's still leader of the Conservative Party, but he's not giving a speech. What we are going to have is basically a 4-day hustings bonanza where you'll hear from the four remaining candidates to be the Conservative Party leader, Robert Jenrick, Tom Tugendhat, James Cleverly, Kemi Badenoch, an awful lot. I think what the last few weeks of political trouble for Labour have done is give the Conservatives a glimmer of hope that actually they're not necessarily out of power for 10, 15, 20 years here, as bad as their defeat was, that actually things could go off the rails quite fast for Labour. Now, perhaps that's ridiculous. Perhaps these are just growing pains for a government. But that is how Conservative MPs I speak to are now feeling. And I think Rosie Duffield's decision to resign from the Labour Party will only boost that.
You hyped for the conference, or are you slightly conferenced out by this point?
I'm always hyped for every party conference, although the last Labour conference, which was last week in Liverpool, I went 3 days where every meal I had other than breakfast was an Indian. And much as I love Indian food, I think I need to eat more healthily if I want to have a sustainable conference this
week. Well, you're going to the wrong place in that case, because Birmingham has the best curries, of course, as we know, in the country.
I wish I could have the conference as an excuse for that kind of behaviour, to be honest, Emily. But yeah,
I used a cricket for eating very unhealthily for weeks at a time. Henry, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Enjoy Birmingham. Henry Zeffman, our chief political correspondent. 7:21 now.
Now, it was dubbed the cursed world title after facing cancellation after cancellation. Last night, Terry Harper was the one celebrating after beating Rhiannon Dixon to take her WBO lightweight belt in Sheffield, live on 5 Live.
All three for your winner by unanimous decision. And the new WBO lightweight champion of the world, Terry Harper!
Well, 5 Live's boxing commentator Steve Bunce was there. We spoke to him on the programme yesterday morning. He sent us this voice note.
Hi, Ellie, and hi, Chris. Boxing, eh? Every single weekend. Yep, in Sheffield late last night, Rhiannon Dixon lost a WBO lightweight title to Terry Harper, who won a world title at a third weight. It was a special night. OK, there may have been 95,000 fewer than there were at Wembley last week. That doesn't matter. It was still full of passion. It was an intriguing fight, to be perfectly honest with you, because Rhiannon Dixon, she comes from the world of white collar. She's only had 10 professional fights, but she had loads of fights on a white collar circuit. And Terry Harper's been in with half a dozen of the best female fighters from the last 10 years. And there was a moment in the sixth round, that moment of high drama, and Rhiannon Dixon connected. It looked like Harper was hurt. She went went back to her corner of her head, down her corner, and screamed at her, telling her to come back, come back, come with us, come with us. You're okay, you can still do this. And she did. She held on. She got the decision. It was a terrific fight. And if you think I'm going home now, going to put my feet up, get a Cohibre Splendido, pour myself something and relax, forget it, because it starts again on Monday. We build up to Nick Bull defending his title, the hero of all Liverpool, defending his title in the city. And then 24 hours after Nick Bull, it's back to Saudi Arabia for one of the best fight weeks ever, week in, week out. It's always a pleasure to talk to you two, though.
Good stuff. It's nice just to hear from Buncey, isn't it, even if we're not actually talking to him. But funny to have that ring announcer in an American voice, wasn't it? In where was it? Sheffield, wasn't it, last night? Yeah. Everybody trying to be the new Michael Buffer.
Yeah.
I wonder what... James Gregg's with us as well, by the way.
I think maybe James could have done it.
Sheffield man. Yeah,
Sheffield
exactly.
Lad.
But, you know...
It doesn't have the same kind of allure, does it? You know, the... I just think the American accent for that is great.
But Buffer with the Let's Get Ready to Rumble, obviously, which I think is his trademark to that. I think,
he has,
hasn't
yeah,
it?
He has.
But there's a report in the Mirror, because I just put this in just because I was thinking about it. They said in 2022, I think this was AJ's rematch with Usyk. It says here that Michael Buffer got paid £57 million for doing that.
What?
It is. Something like that. I was going to say, I didn't think it was that much, but I know it's something like some X million
when
he
did it in 2019 when he was fighting Andy Ruiz Jr. He got 55 million.
You know what?
And we're in the wrong job.
And you know what the thing is?
We can use our voices.
He doesn't even do the undercard. You know, if you're paying him that money, you'd think,
really?
Right, come on, Michael, you're doing all of them. You're doing all 12 fights.
No,
we're working your hard
for
that.
I mean, for 55 million, he's not even having to get punched in the face, is he? You know, that's what you would imagine him
Whereas
boxing.
Whereas us on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. That's it. Anyway.
Anyway, good. Well, the reason that James is here all morning doing the sport, but we wanted to talk about the Premier League, because it was pretty fascinating yesterday in lots of ways. Chelsea's Cole Palmer making Premier League history, becoming the first ever player to score four goals in the first half of a match. Chelsea's game against Brighton finished 4-2, with the 22-year-old disappointed that he didn't score more.
Yeah, I just try to play every game best as I can and hopefully pull off performances like that today. Should have had five or six. Yeah, we got a lot more chances and I just took the...
Well, former England and Arsenal forward Theo Walcott has been talking about Cole Palmer, and he's likened him to greats like Dennis Bergkamp and Robin van Persie. So that's not a bad comparison.
Great company to keep. And I mean, it was actually quite funny. We'll play a clip in the sport very shortly. Actually, he actually said, "I never saw Dennis Bergkamp play," because he's only 22. Oh, so of course he hasn't. That made me feel very old. Actually, Micah Richards said that in terms of brains of footballers, he's so ahead of the game. He's a joy to watch. He's got everything. Gary Lineker said, "Every time I see him, he takes my breath away." And Lineker actually reckoned on Match of the Day yesterday that there's, you know, that out of all the talent that England have got, you know, you think of Bellingham and Kane and all those players who starred at the Euros, and Saka, of course, and, you know, the list could go on. Lineker reckons he's the very best out of the talent pool. So, you know, remember, he got 22 goals last season in that faltering Chelsea side. And it's hard to believe he didn't actually start a game for England in the Euros, isn't it? It just makes you think, what on earth were we doing?
Yeah, well, we had a text, actually. I didn't put a name on it, so do put your name on text. We'd love to give you a shout-out properly. The real question, has Pep Guardiola made a horrendous gaffe? Selling Cole Palmer for £40 million seemed good business at the time, but it wasn't, truly wasn't. Saka's place in the England team looks under threat, such as Palmer's peerless form of late.
Well, if you think that Didier Drogba didn't score that many hat-tricks for Chelsea in his time there, and what a decorated player he was. Crazy, really, when you think about that. And actually, Enzo Maresca must be counting his lucky stars, because he took that job, obviously, coming from Leicester, having done a great job with them in the summer. But before that, many forget that Maresca actually worked under Pep Guardiola at City and worked with Cole Palmer. So he must be thinking, this is great. What a talent I'm walking into here. And he's probably going to get the very best out of him. That might be the biggest gaffe of Pep Guardiola's career. You can't really say he makes too many mistakes. But yeah, for £40 million, that seems like a real snip. And it did at the time, you remember. You know, people were going, hey, that seems like quite a good signing. And it's proved to be brilliant.
Top of the table in Liverpool. City dropping points for the second week in a row, but Liverpool had to grind it out at Wolves.
Yeah, it might not have been the most dominant performance, really, but Liverpool are looking pretty imperious at the top. 5 wins from 6, the surprise 1-0 defeat by Nottingham Forest, the only blot on their copybook this season, above Manchester City and Arsenal. Almost, really, a perfect start for Arne Slot coming in. Big shoes to fill, of course. Jurgen Klopp with that kind of rock and roll football that he brought to Anfield, but actually they weathered that Wolves storm yesterday at Molineux and came out on top. And look at where they're sitting. I know it's very early stages. I hate talking about the Premier League table before we get to 10 games in, really. That always seems like the kind of natural yardstick. But they are top and they're playing really good football. And they're the sort of games you just feel like Wolves at Molineux, who are playing really good football themselves and not quite getting the results, you just feel that that's a potential banana skin, isn't it? And they've come through that with flying colours. So yeah. Well played, Liverpool, yesterday.
Well, I mean, Arsenal suddenly found them nearly had a banana skin to deal with Leicester. And also, Everton, we talked about yesterday morning on the programme, finally get 3 points.
Yeah, miserable season on the pitch, isn't it? Looking like taking a further turn as well when they fell behind. They were booed off loudly, really loudly at half-time by the home faithful. Sean Dyche, though, has been supported, hasn't he, by the club's hierarchy. His position has been deemed as, quote, safe by those in charge at Everton. Fans' opinion of their boss, I think, was verging on a little bit perilous at half-time. But yeah, great turnaround. And obviously new ownership as well coming in at Everton. So actually, perhaps Everton fans, feel free to tell us otherwise. But I reckon a little bit of good feeling that was long overdue there.
James, thanks for the moment. We'll get lots more of the other sports news from James in just a few minutes' time.
Yeah, it's a big day of action in the Women's Super League today as well. Manchester City taking on Brighton in the lunchtime kickoff. It's live on BBC Two, actually. Elsewhere, Everton take on Manchester United. Leicester welcome Arsenal. Liverpool travel to West Ham and Aston Villa are at home to Spurs. Let's talk to football reporter Emily Herbert. Morning, Emily.
Good morning.
Which game has got your eye? Manchester City, Brighton. What do you expect from Brighton this season?
Well, I'm expecting big things. I mean, after they beat Everton 4-0 last weekend, I mean, they've got new signing Frank Kirby as well, who's a great addition. She scored a penalty. And Sieke as well, a hat-trick on her debut. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, does it? So I'm expecting big things. They've got a new-ish manager. I mean, he came in last season, but yeah, I think big things for Brighton. And Manchester City obviously coming off the back of a draw with Arsenal last weekend, which was a draw dropping game. It was end to end football. So yeah, it'd be an exciting day of WSL action today.
Yeah, the Manchester City will be there or thereabouts, won't they? You would have thought, as will Chelsea. I mean, they're not in action today, but new manager, same business, you know, beating Palace. And you've got a feel for Palace, newly promoted. There they were thinking, right, we've got to give it a go and then get walloped 7-0.
Yeah, absolutely feel for Palace. I mean, a 7-0 loss to Chelsea on a Friday night and then previously losing to Spurs 4-0 as a welcome to the WSL is pretty harsh. But it just shows, I feel, the gap between the Championship and the WSL. It's huge. You know, Bristol City struggled last year. We saw them come up and then go straight back down. And I'm hoping it won't be the same for Palace. But well, 7-0 to Chelsea, it doesn't look good for them.
No. And Arsenal, I don't know the strength of Leicester for this season, but Arsenal, it's an interesting season for them as well, isn't it? With new signings. And well, other players, really strong players still to come back actually from injury as well.
Yeah, I think it's probably a make or break season for Arsenal. I feel there's a lot of pressure on Jonas Idle's heads this year to get some trophies. I mean, they won the cup, the Conti Cup last year, but for a side of their quality, I don't feel that is enough. I feel they need the WSL or the Champions League. Now, they have qualified this year for the Champions League. Last year, getting knocked out in the first round to Paris FC was not ideal for them. But yeah, they've signed really well. Mariona Caldente scored her first goal for the club midweek in the Champions League qualifiers. She's an absolute delight to watch. And we know that, winning so many Champions Leagues. Rosa Kafaji as well is a young talent, but is, well, apparently this week, never seen without a ball at her feet. And you can tell as well, she loves to dribble around players. So yeah, an exciting watch, I think.
Good stuff. Excellent. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Football reporter Emily Herber. As I say, that match, Manchester City against Brighton, lunchtime kickoff, is going to be live on BBC Two. It's 7:33, it's 5 Live. Let's get the news.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And the headlines. The death of the leader of Hezbollah has been described as a historic turning point by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Hassan Nasrallah was killed in an Israeli airstrike on his group's headquarters in the Lebanese capital, Beirut.
The MP, Rosie Duffield, has told the BBC that Sir Keir Starmer's team cares more about greed and power than about making a difference. She has resigned from the Labour Party and will now sit as an independent MP.
Three people have been charged with murdering a man who was stabbed in Norwich last week. The body of Calvin Taylor, who was 19, was found in a flat last Saturday.
And Oasis are due to reveal more details on Monday after a cryptic message appeared on social media. The band posted photos of billboards featuring Noel and Liam Gallagher with the headline, "Be careful what you wish for." Very quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Phil Foden, he loves fishing. Did you know that? I don't know. James, did you know that?
I didn't know that.
No. So he's been on a fishing thing on YouTube called Spooner's Fishing Vlog, and he's talked about the buzz he gets from landing a big fish. He joined fishing pro Neil Spooner and his son Freddie. They were on a camping trip where he showed off his custom fishing rods engraved with Foden 47, the shirt number he's always had at City, of course. He said he started fishing with my old man when he was about 5 years old and he's loved it ever since. They were by the side of an Oxfordshire lake, and he told the vlog, "Whatever fishing I'm doing, I enjoy it." Now, fishing, it's massive, isn't it? We always talk about how, you know, Britain's biggest participation sport, all of that. And you think to yourself, is it, you know, the number of people who are playing football every weekend? But yeah, apparently they always say it is, don't they? We were looking at some of the stats earlier on. If you're an angler, because you walk past them when you go for a walk past the lake and all of that. They've got the little tent and you've got all the gear and everything. And I walk past and I just think, this is a complete mystery to me, like a complete and utter mystery.
Well, you actually get people sitting around the old ship canal.
Yep. Yes, you
close to where we work.
You do.
I just said, what are you catching in there apart from a...
That's a good point as well.
Shopping trolley.
Yeah, maybe. Undercooking it a bit there, Ellie, maybe.
Yeah, it's lovely. I love the ship canal.
Yeah. But I just wonder, if you do it, then can you just tell us where you fish, right? And just distill it into a sentence as to why you love it. And it can't just be, getting away from the house or any of that kind of stuff. You know, sell it. Why is it such a great experience, you know? And if you could just put that in a sentence with your name and where you fish, that would be really good.
Do you want
good.
A word limit on there?
No, not really. No. Just a nice kind of description of why it is such a great
thing. Sentence rather than an essay, perhaps.
Yes, yeah, a couple of sentences. But 85058, I would be keen to hear that from you this morning. Let's get the sport. Here's James.
Looking forward to hearing some of those. There is so much to talk about Premier League-wise this morning. Cole Palmer, though, yesterday afternoon, became the first player to score 4 goals in the first half of a Premier League match. Enzo Maresca, his manager, has had a really good start to life as the Chelsea boss. They are 4th in the table after 6 matches. For Palmer, the records keep tumbling. Theo Walcott was on Match of the Day last night. He said he had a touch of the Dennis Bergkamps about him. Although Palmer actually... Well, he appreciated a comparison, but he did have a bit of a confession to make.
Yeah, I know he's a legend of the Premier League, but I didn't really watch him. I think I was too young.
But makes me feel old.
I've seen clips and stuff, so yeah, he's a top player, but thank you for your Walcott.
Yeah, nice one. Cheers, Cole. 4-2 it finished over Brighton yesterday. Manchester City could have stayed at the top with 3 points, of course, in the early game, but they could only manage a 1-1 draw at Newcastle. It was a penalty in the end that cost the champions the win. Anthony Gordon's strike, meaning that Newcastle boss Eddie Howe was delighted to have bounced back from last week's loss to Fulham.
We are happy, especially after last week. That was a good display. That was us playing our way, brave. Thought it was... two teams going right at each other for probably 70 minutes. Last 20, I think they were stronger than us, and yeah, we had to defend really well to maintain the point.
Arsenal level on points with City after a dramatic game at the Emirates. The Gunners squandered a 2-0 lead against newly promoted Leicester. Arsenal then scored twice in injury time to seal a 4-2 win and keep pace with the leaders. Mikel Arteta echoed the thoughts of many Gunners fans post-match by praising the 17-year-old Ethan Nwanyeri. Arteta reckons that he changed the game for them.
Ethan came on, something changed straight away, and the team has that belief because they understand that to win in any context, you have to be able to react in the right way. And I was so pleased to see the team react in the way that they did today.
I should say, then, it's Liverpool who lead the way. They seized advantage of Manchester City dropping points to go top of the Premier League. They beat Wolves 2-1 at Molineux. The Wolves boss, Gary O'Neill, was frustrated that his side's excellent performance had fallen short.
Disappointed that we went off plan for about a minute, where just after we scored, for some reason we get carried away and caught in the emotion of it and go chasing and open the game up once, really, and get punished for a penalty. Apart from that minute where we lost our way and went chasing and opened the game up, I thought the lads were excellent.
Dwight McNeil scored both Everton goals. They came from behind to beat Crystal Palace 2-1, a first win of the season for Sean Dyche's side. New ownership and the first win, all in the space of a week of good feeling, finally, at Goodison, I suspect. In the Scottish Premiership, the champion Celtic wrapped up a ninth straight win in all competitions in style against St Johnstone yesterday, 6-0 the final scoreline. Aberdeen beat Dundee 2-1 at Dens Park to stay level on points with Celtic. They've been great this season. Rangers play Hibs today. Day that kicks off at midday. In Rugby Union's Premiership, reigning champions Northampton put their opening day defeat behind them with a deserved 30-24 win over Exeter at Franklin's Gardens. Elsewhere, Saracens beat Sale 45-26. Harlequins were 28-14 winners over Newcastle Falcons. Lancashire have been relegated to Division 2 of Cricket's County Championship. Yorkshire, meanwhile, were promoted yesterday. And in Rugby League Super League, Warrington Wolves set up a Super League playoff semi-final against Hull KR, courtesy of George Williams' golden point drop goal in extra time against St Helens. It finished 23-22. Sensational. More sport to talk about throughout the morning here on Five Live Sunday Breakfast.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Lee says, I fish in Abington, it's all about the peace and quiet, I love it, so there. I wasn't for a second questioning why people do it, by the way. Do you know what I mean? All power to you. Daryl says, I'm a sponsored angler. I'm not going to say the brand, I'm afraid, but he does say it. I will travel all over the country fishing for predator fish. Fish that eat other fish.
Ah.
Using lures that mimic real fish. I do it for the buzz of the hit, the catch and the release, all important. Being outside is great for your health. I can walk an average of 6 miles in a morning, and it's great for physical and mental well-being. Give it a try, says Daryl.
Well, Rich from Southport, morning. Relaxing, at one with nature.
Mm-hmm.
No people, generally. Peace, tranquility.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm not brilliant when I've got complete silence in my head. But I quite like the idea of no people.
Yes.
that's a winner, isn't it? Shall we get the weather forecast for the day? Looking to see who's got it. Matt Taylor.
Good morning. Chilly start, gradually getting wetter and windier for some. Southwest England, Wales, Isle of Man and Northern Ireland. Seeing the thicker cloud arrive first. Gales around coasts as well. 50-60 mile out gusts for one or two. But outbreaks of rain erratically developing through the morning, afternoon, where it could turn heavy and persistent. Across the rest of England, away from the southwest, staying largely dry for good parts of the day. Best of any brighter breaks in the east. Fairly cloudy for most, but rain will develop through the evening and overnight. Scotland staying dry, though, for most through the day, as showers clear away from Orkney and Shetland. A lot of cloud around, but some brighter breaks here and there. Temperature across the UK today, 11 to 15. But persistent rain across England tonight could cause some minor flooding. Matt Taylor, 5 Live Weather.
BBC Radio 5 Live. The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Sunday Breakfast.
With Eleanor Oldroyd and Chris Warburton.
So we were talking to our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman, about going to Birmingham and eating nothing but curry for a week, having eaten nothing but curry for a week at the Labour Party conference. but yeah, that's not going to be the main purpose of the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham today. It's all about finding a new leader. Our political correspondent, Hannah Miller, is there. Hannah, good morning.
Good morning, Eleanor.
Remind us of the contenders and crucially what they all stand for.
Yeah, so this is going to be a pretty unusual conference because it is basically a giant hustings for the four of them. There are banners inside the conference centre with all the candidates' faces on them. I'm sitting here with a giant Robert Jenrick head to my left-hand side. So let's start with him. He is the candidate who's got the most MPs publicly backing him at the moment. And then we have Kemi Badenoch. She's a close second with MPs, a pretty strong contender, thought to be the favourite among the party's members who will get the final say. There's James Cleverly, the former Home Secretary, and also Tom Tugendhat, who's widely regarded as being kind of the most centre ground of the candidates. All of them doing lots of events over the next few days, speeches, Q&A sessions. I'm sure there'll be a few conversations behind closed doors as well.
And the various things that they are standing for, I mean, Kemi Badenoch has done a piece or has written something in the Sunday Telegraph today saying not all cultures are equally valid when it comes to immigration.
Yeah, Kemi Badenoch is calling for an immigration and an integration strategy. Her language on it, as you say, is pretty strong. She says some people have customs which may be at odds with British values. Kemi Badenoch was born in the UK. She grew up in Nigeria before she came back to the UK on her own when she was 16. And she says in her article that it would be naive to assume that immigrants automatically abandon what she calls ancestral ethnic hostilities at the border. She talks particularly about being struck by what she says is the number of recent immigrants to the UK who hate Israel. Now, that is pretty strong language. A lot of people might disagree with what she's saying there, but she is someone who is known for taking a stance on particular issues and sort of saying what she really thinks, and that is clearly what she's doing in this article this morning.
Well, I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from the views of the other candidates over the next few days. When are we going to find out who the new leader will be?
After all of this, not actually until early November. So what's going to happen is there'll be all four of them strutting the stuff over the next few days. MPs, members get to have their say, ask them questions. There are even these post boxes around saying ask a candidate a question, where you can put a little leaflet in saying what you'd like them to answer. So it's been set up over the next few days to really kind of allow the leadership election to be front and centre and quite tightly gripped by the party. And then after the next 4 days, after their speeches on Wednesday, everyone will go back to Westminster. MPs will get a vote. They will eventually get it down to the final two. The final two then go out to Conservative Party members who decide who they actually want. And that, as I say, doesn't happen until early November.
Thank you very much indeed. Hannah Miller is our political correspondent in Birmingham, and Matt Chorley will present his afternoon show here on Five Live from Birmingham and the Tory party conference next week. And we were talking about Rosie Duffield resigning from Labour earlier on with Henry, and you will be able to hear Pat McFadden on Laura Koonsberg's programme on BBC One after 9 o'clock. And we will, of course, still be on air after 9 o'clock, so we'll play you a bit of what he has to say between 9 and 10 this morning. 7:45.
This is all smoke and mirrors. That's sales.
On BBC iPlayer.
What have you got to offer me?
Look, this is in all of our interests, right?
The new series of Industry.
I'm so glad you came.
Starring Kit Harington.
I'm an investment banker. Did you invite me here to watch you eat?
No, I invited you here to seduce you.
I've never met anyone with a bigger blind spot.
All's fair in love and war, right?
I needed my friend and you used me.
Industry.
Now, we go to work.
Starts Tuesday on BBC iPlayer.
Hello, good morning. It's 7:46. It's Eleanor Oldroyd and it's Chris Warburton. We've been talking about heavy rain. We were talking about it. I was doing breakfast on Friday and how it's affecting parts of the Midlands, mm-hmm. Bedfordshire and Northamptonshire, etc. But it's been causing flooding and travel disruption across different parts of England this week. And it doesn't really look like it's going to be getting better for some parts. There are yellow weather warnings in place today for heavy wind and rain across parts of Wales, the southwest of England, the south coast of England as well, posing a further risk of flooding. We thought we'd have a word with Dan Willis. Dan's a farmer in Berkshire and his land was flooded last week and is in the warning zone for today, actually. Dan, morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. What do you grow and what's happened over the past week?
We grow predominantly all arable crops, so wheat, barley, oilseed rape and oats. Unfortunately, with this, you know, this is our peak busy time for planting, so we should be busy putting all the crops back in the field. Everyone's seen them harvested and so on and so forth, but it's our peak time for for planting. So, you know, with the heavy rain, we've been unable to plant. So we're starting to, you know, we've got probably another 3 or 4 weeks of peak planting time, if you like, for the time of year. But obviously the weather's had other ideas and the ground is more than saturated.
What does that delay mean?
Well, the delay has quite a financial implication for us because we can't harvest the crops, you know, in due time next summer because, you know, and yields can be affected. With certain crops, they get to a cutoff point that you just can't plant them anymore because they're not going to mature in time. So, you know, after last year, we had such a terrible wet winter. You know, none of us expected our crops to be very good at all, but, you know, they turned out reasonably average at best. Okay. Unfortunately, as a business, so you need better than reasonably average all the time.
You do, obviously. Goes without saying, really. So, I mean, the way you're describing it, is this becoming more regular compared to how things have been in the past? And are you beginning to consider if this is going to be a new normal, Dan?
Well, I think this is one thing we've got to consider that, you know, we do seem to have these sort of rain events, and they do seem to be an awful lot of rain in a very short time. I think we've always had wet weather. There's always been very wet years and very dry years.
Yes.
But we do seem to get these, you know, short spells as if the jet stream moves. We seem to get low pressure upon low pressure. And it's so disruptive.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do. It's one of the few businesses which is totally at mercy to Mother Nature, and we work with it every day, but it will test the patience of a saint at the moment.
I can imagine. It must be so frustrating for all of you if you're just good to go and getting ready and then it just doesn't happen because of what you're seeing.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you've got a yellow weather warning for potentially more rain. So let's see what happens, Dan, but I've got my fingers crossed for you, and thanks for talking to us.
Yes. Yeah, no problem at all.
Cheers.
Okay, thank you.
Dan Willis giving us an idea. Just one farm there in Berkshire. Land flooded last week and got that yellow weather warning. We will talk about this a bit more later on in the programme. We have someone from the Royal Meteorological Society. It's one of those words. Yeah. I did it okay. I think just about got away with it. It's 10 minutes to 8 now.
Philip Schofield will be back on TV screens tomorrow for the first time in more than a year. He stepped down from ITV's This Morning after admitting to an affair with a younger employee. The 62-year-old will appear on Channel 5's reality series Castaway, which sees him stranded on an island off Madagascar for 10 days. In it, he discusses his sexuality.
I know that coming out for so many people is liberating and it's freedom on a plate. Absolutely be yourself, live your life to the absolute full. It's the saying, just live your best life. But for me, doing it later in life, at the moment, it's just given me more anguish than joy.
And Philip Schofield suggests that this could be his last TV appearance.
I'll be slammed for this. Philip Schofield, mad rant. But the thing is, I don't care anymore. I don't care. This is me having my say as I bow out.
Well, Channel 5 have described the documentary as an epic study of solitude and mental fortitude, with each episode capturing their raw experience, both physical survival and the emotional toll of solitude, offering an intimate exploration of the human spirit and the limits of endurance. And you can watch it. I think it's a three-part series.
Mm.
It starts tomorrow night.
There's a full write-up of all of that on the BBC News website as well. There's an article. And it's an interesting show to choose to do, isn't it? And I suppose he probably thought, well, I can say what I want to say in my own words, because he could easily have picked a kind of sit-down interview, take your pick of the kind of person who might do that, right?
Yeah.
It could even be a harder one or a soft soap one or whatever it might be. But interesting to just think, actually, I'm going to be miles and miles away from all of what happens in this country, and I can just sort of say my piece and it get picked up on in the way that it has been. It's an interesting choice, I think.
And interesting to watch and make your own judgment,
yes, exactly
I think.
Exactly that.
Right. It is, what is it now, 7:52. And let's talk about Nihal's headliners show later on Five Live and BBC Sounds. Nihal's been speaking to Dina Asher-Smith, the fastest British woman in history. She talks about that interview after the 100-metre semi-final at the Paris Olympics. She wasn't happy. Her competitive family and life away from the track, specifically about fashion.
Post-Paris, what was really jarring to me when I was reading a lot of it was how upset you were, right?
Yeah, it was
right?
Very
of not
upset.
Getting up into the 100 metres. And this kind of, oh, she walked off from an interview. She cried and she walked off from an interview. And it felt like, okay, at that moment, something quite extraordinary has happened to you emotionally.
I was not having a great day.
Right. And
was
yet
not having a
you're
great day.
Almost still expected to perform, to stand there and talk it out. And you haven't processed it yourself.
Yeah, and
at
I
that
think
point.
At that point I was in the middle of the 200 as well. Like I was determined not to let my disappointment from the one affect how I perform in the
it
two.
Can't.
So in that moment it just wasn't conducive to my performance to rehash kind of what happened, even though it was literally the day before. I had my performance hat on, and as soon as I felt myself getting upset, I had to remove myself from that environment in the most respectful way possible, mainly because I didn't have time to be upset in that regard. Like I was still in the middle of the Olympics. You have like the days or the weeks when everything's done to be as upset if you like and process it and do all that. But my job in that moment as an athlete and representing myself, representing my country, is to put my best performance together for the 200. And I just knew that I had to remove myself from that situation. And I did respectfully go,
I'm not
a rude walk-off person,
no.
But I just had to, like, I owed it to all the hard work that I'd done. I owed it to the caliber of athlete that I am to put myself in the best mental headspace to do put together a good 200 meter performance. So I couldn't have that about the one anymore.
Well, Dina Asher-Smith, she's such a great role model and an incredible person as well. Mm. And you can hear more from her in conversation with Nihal, headliners from 8 p.m. here on Five Live, and it's on BBC Sounds as well.
Thanks for the fishing text, the angling text. They are very good.
We've been
and we'll get
angling
to,
for texts this
we
morning.
We have indeed.
And,
we have delivered. We'll get to some of those in a little bit because I want to talk about this story. Lots of people heading off to football matches today. Fingers crossed you arrive at the right ground. This is because one footballer, he drove 70 miles to the wrong location, so a 140-mile round trip, thinking his team were playing away, and they weren't. Luke Parsons is the gaffer for Newark Town. Hello, Luke.
Hi, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. Now, the guy we're talking about, we did ask if he wanted to come on, and he said no, which is fair enough. I respect that. But you're the man who can tell us what happened. Go on. What happened for Sam here?
Yeah, so, bless him. We obviously was playing St. Neots in the League Cup, which were in our league, but we have a North and South. And we had a meet time at 1:30 at home. And I always put in the group, we're at home, we're in blue when we're at home.
Yeah.
And if we're away, I'll put a postcode in there.
Right.
So he's got to just after meet time, I was outside setting up the warm up, and I get a phone call from young Sam. And he had a bit of a worrying sounding voice. And he says, I've messed up. I think, what do you mean you messed up? He says, I've drove all the way to St. Neots thinking we was away. So obviously I start burst out laughing, saying, you're joking.
Yeah.
And he says, no, I read the message at 3 a.m. and I just thought we was away. So I said, the fact you've gone out your own way to find a postcode.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit, mind-boggling.
Are you with all the other lads at this point?
No, I'm outside.
No.
Center wall, but,
right.
I couldn't wait to get back into the dressing room.
Come on, tell us that bit. What did you say?
So obviously I just said to him, well, how long would it take to get back? And he was like, it's about 1:25. And I looked at my watch thinking, oof, three minutes before kickoff. So I'll name him on the bench, but he was due to start. I'd had the conversation with him on the Thursday to say, make sure his head's on it. He's earned an opportunity.
Yeah.
So anyway, I put the phone down, go back into the dressing room, and I says, lads, I've got a bit of an announcement to make. Sam Wright has decided to drive all the way up to St Newt's. So everyone starts laughing.
Yeah.
And obviously the fine committee goes, he does realise it's £10 a fine for being late. And
oh, come on, man, that's harsh. That is harsh.
So, £10 fine and £1 a minute. I think he was nearly an hour and a half late. So he racked up a big fine from the fine committee.
But what I like, though, he turned up, he got his kit on, and then tell us the rest.
Yeah, so he turned up, guys, kid, and unfortunately, we had to put him on the bench. We was 3-0 down at half-time. Got back into the game, I think it was about 3-1, 3-2, and I brought Sam on the wing. And then, he ended up scoring the fifth goal to make us win 5-3. So, completed a great story for us.
That's great, isn't it? That is absolutely fantastic. After 140-mile round trip, he gets his fine, comes off the bench and puts one in. I love it. And don't tell me you find him in the end. Come on.
Well, I if it was down to me, yeah, I would have done, but yeah, the fine committee did. Oh. However, one of the volunteers... parents, 96-year-old woman, she said she wanted to pay the fine, so it actually got reduced because I don't think they wanted to take the money off her.
No, fair enough. Oh, well, that was very good of her. Excellent. Listen, thank you. Really appreciate you coming on and telling us, Luke, and send all our best to Sam.
Thank you, I will do.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. Luke Parsons, who's the boss of Newark Town. Poor old Sam.
Oh, that's Luke sounds like a good boss, though.
He does.
The fact the first words he said were, bless him.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Look, you can do the text thing, and it's been done a million times, hasn't it, where it's like, oh, I turned up at the wrong location. I thought I was going to be going to this church for a wedding, and it was that church for a wedding. Yeah, we have done that many times. A variation on the theme with your help would be if you ended up going to the wrong location, but it ended up being the right result. So positive consequences,
yes,
from going to the wrong place. Maybe.
So you might have gone to the wrong church,
yes,
ended up at the wrong wedding, but yeah, met somebody there.
Who you then married.
Who you then married.
Not on that
or
day.
Or have changed your life. No, but randomly,
yeah,
randomly got chatting to one of the bridesmaids at this wrong wedding. So yeah, wrong location.
Wrong location, right result. That's yes, how we're pitching this, Ellie. Yeah,
I think we can get some good ones on this.
So something which happened to your advantage by going to the wrong place. Could have been a work thing. I suppose.
It could have been a work thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. 85058. We always. I always kind of feel we should remind people of how to get in touch.
Well,
with
it's
us.
Always handy if you're a new listener.
New listener, welcome to the show.
Always welcome.
Wrong location, right result.
That's it. Right, we're coming up to 8 o'clock. You're at the right location. It's 5 Live Sunday breakfast.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And the headlines, the death of the leader of Hezbollah has been described as a historic turning point by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Hassan Nasrallah was killed in an Israeli airstrike on his group's headquarters in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mr. Netanyahu said the killing was evidence his country was winning its fight against its enemies.
We settled the score with the one responsible for the murder of countless Israelis and many citizens of other countries, including hundreds of Americans and dozens of French. Nasrallah's elimination is an essential condition to achieve the goals we have set.
Ayatollah Khamenei has declared 5 days of mourning in Iran, which backs Hezbollah. Cross-border fire between Israel and Hezbollah continues, with Israel saying it's hit dozens of targets. Lebanese media say at least 15 people were killed in the overnight strikes. Earlier we spoke to the former BBC Middle East correspondent Jim Muir, who is in West Beirut.
What we have had is a wave of displaced people because Israel has been hitting the southern suburbs, very densely populated. A lot of people have fled from there and, of course, from the south of the country and the east as well. So they've converged on relatively safe places like here. So our whole area is swamped with people looking for somewhere to stay, some of them sleeping out.
The MP, Rosie Duffield, has told the BBC that Sir Keir Starmer's team cares more about greed and power than about making a difference. She's resigned from the Labour Party and will now sit as an independent MP.
We all had our faith in Keir Starmer and a Labour government, and I feel that voters and activists and MPs are being completely laughed at and completely taken for granted.
She's criticised the Prime Minister for accepting tens of thousands of pounds worth of gifts from donors. Downing Street hasn't responded.
The Conservatives' annual conference starts in Birmingham today, where the focus will be on the party leadership contest. The four candidates will all use the conference to argue their case before two more are voted out of the race.
SpaceX has launched its mission to bring back two astronauts stranded on the International Space Station since June. The Dragon capsule lifted off from Cape Canaveral in Florida last night.